Why'd you go and leave me borderline insane? There's no love on this earth worth this much pain. The loneliness surrounds me like a cold dark cloud. I can't hear myself thinking for crying out loud. Look at me, a helpless, hopeless case of endless misery. For crying out loud, what happened to the man who walked so proud? I just can't help myself for crying out loud. Sitting at the table we once called our own. Maybe I should give it up and go on home. I still feel alone in the middle of a crowd. They all just think I'm crazy for crying out loud. Look at me, a helpless, hopeless case of endless misery. Crying out loud, what happened to the man who walked so proud? I just can't help myself for crying out loud. And I can't eat and I can't sleep, crying out loud.
Now, war is coming between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network. Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge, every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Oh, wait. That wasn't supposed to happen. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. Here we are. It is Thursday, 17th of March, and we're going to try and take a little bit different direction tonight. We've got a few news things we're going to talk about. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about guns and other boring stuff like that. We haven't done much gun talking for a while, but anyway, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things that there's some new stuff actually going on that I might be able to talk to you about here in a week or two, not right now. So we'll keep you informed as we're able to. But see, John Fish made it in there with us tonight. Let me see who else in the chat room. So we've got a pretty good bunch representing Washington tonight. Again, glad to see all you guys. Lots of the regulars and a handful of anonymous. Let's see here. Don't need to name all of you, but I appreciate all of you being here anyway, each and every one of you. Okay, let's, talking about guns, let's talk a little bit real quick about what not to do with guns. There's a guy that, there's another story after this I'll tell you about. I don't remember if I, talked about it here recently or not, but I'm going to throw it in here just as a quick recap anyway. There's a guy here that's playing Billy Badass here. He's got a revolver in his hand, finger on the trigger, and so he decides to take it for a test drive, and so these took one of his friends out there with him. And this test drive consisted of one of them holding the camera while the other one pointed this brand new gun at his head. But things from here didn't go so well. Deciding to play it a little on the dangerous side, the wannabe badass topped it off by pointing the gun near his skull and pulling the trigger. With the first chamber apparently empty, and the hammer dropped, and what did it do? It went click. Okay. Well, thinking that was pretty funny, and he was grinning like a possum here, and so he did the same thing, except, well, at some point along the line, it had been loaded by somebody, and somebody else didn't unload it, so this time, it went off. And, the pictures, the video was pretty neat. The guy's hair fluffed up real big, and you can see stuff splatter against the wall. However, it didn't kill him. It just grazed his skull, a few stitches. There was actually an entry and exit wound, but either there wasn't enough brains in there for it to make any difference, or it just didn't get deep enough to get to that point. Yeah, as a matter of fact, here's a picture right here I think I can put on the chat room for you. Let's put this in here, and I'll show you why there's an exit and entrance wound here. There we go. That ought to show up. There you go. That's what happens if you get just a little bit too close with the muzzle. And, wow, C7, I just saw your post right there. Oil field worse than 2009. It was pretty bad then. I remember that was the year that Amy and I got married, and things were pretty serious then. Working only 11 hours a week. Wow. That is tough, brother. Well, get used to it, because it ain't going to be over for a while. We're gonna see a lot more of that. I kind of suspected something like this might happen. Okay, well, sorry to hear that. Well, anyway, yeah, B2 Basic. No, the guy certainly wasn't playing with a full deck, for sure. And we're not sure if the, obviously the bullet didn't get deep to where if there was any brains in there, the bullet didn't quite get deep enough to get in there, I reckon. But there's another guy, we might have talked about this, I don't remember, but I'm just going to go over it quickly. There's another guy here. This happened in Concrete, Washington. 43-year-old guy. Died after he shot himself in the face while taking selfies. Oh, please. Are you serious right now? Says the man and his girlfriend were taking pictures of themselves with the weapon on Sunday where he lived, and he shot himself. Says the woman reported that she and the man had taken photos with the gun several times that day, and the man had loaded and unloaded multiple times. She said a bullet apparently was still in the gun the final time that he fired. Apparently it was. Yeah, apparently that's what happened. The death is being investigated as accidental. The man's name has not been released. So, that's all I got to say about that. There is, let me check and see this. I don't know if I can share this one with you or not. I forgot where it came from. It is, oh, this, yeah, I can. I'll do it much to my, against my better judgment. I'm still going to go ahead and not mention the name. But I will say that the guy lives in Arizona. He's down around the Tucson area. He put on a rally here not too long ago. It was a dismal failure. But here is a post that he put out on a blog about LaVoy's shooting and the rallies and stuff. This guy has turned out to be definitely not a an icon of popularity and patriotism here. He says, I'm sorry to crash your pity party, but the time has come for all of you to stop wallowing in ignorance and sanctimonious self-pity, get off your knees, and start acting like rational American citizens. Over the last several weeks, I hope that some of you might be learning something about your rights and obligations as American citizens. However, on March 4th, 2016, most of your speeches in front of the U.S. District Court in Tucson, Arizona, and just about every post-rally Every post-rally post on this Facebook site has convinced me otherwise. On March 4th, 2016, amongst you, only one guy had the guts to shout his anger and righteous indignation at federal authorities who might have felt inclined to take our petition for redress of grievances seriously. With your help, they would have taken the petition seriously when we lawfully marched on their neighborhoods door-to-door, politely asking their neighbors and families to sign up. Wake up, people! LaVoy Finicum was not a God-fearing man. In his last days, he was a lawless man, hard-working man, loved dearly by his family, who fortunately chose to live out his last days on earth violently, away from his family's loving embrace in direct defiance of the law and Christ's teachings. That is not at all. At all. About LaVoy Finicum. And then he quotes the Bible verse here, that he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. Have any of you struggled to comprehend the meaning of that? Whatever else he might have been, LaVoy Finicum was not a man of peace, a man seeking justice. In America, you don't seek justice at the point of a gun. And there's another two pages. He gets down towards the end, he says, but you, ignorant redneck hicks, and your superior attitudes and vast constitutional ignorance, don't know anything about the Constitution and due process. Today, 2 days after the rally, you still don't know what your constitutional rights are and how to aggressively assert and protect them. So, it goes on and on. It's much longer. But, anyway, that's, I would like to mention the guy's name, but I'm not going to. What'd you say, Yakima Glock? Funny, had only had a bullet in there the last time he took pictures. Yeah, that is funny, all right. All right, let's see here if I've got any more of these stupid pictures stories to talk about, and then we'll move on to bigger and gooder things. Let's see. Well, that's kind of gun related. We'll get to that in just a second. I told you that West Virginia had passed their concealed weapons. I believe it was the constitutional carry bill. And let me see here. I think it was the reciprocity where they have to accept all permits from other places. But what I didn't tell you was that the House and Senate got together and immediately voted to override. The governor vetoed this to begin with. And on March 5th, when all these other rallies and stuff was going on, excuse my ignorant hillbilly hick lingo there, he vetoed it, and he says the House voted to override the decision. Then Saturday morning, the following day, the Senate voted in favor of overriding the veto as well. The vote was 23-11. So that's pretty cool. The votes, it's going to go into effect in 90 days, so about 80 days now since this went in. Currently, it's legal for police. Wow. Currently, it's legal for people in West Virginia to openly carry a firearm without a permit. However, to conceal a permit or is anybody supervising me? Jeez. However, to conceal a firearm, a permit is required. This is the second time that the governor has vetoed the bill. The first time was last year. Man. So, good news there. I like to hear stuff like that. I don't want to get into the. Let's talk about this just for a second, because we have so many Glock owners. I'm just going to talk about this very briefly. But I had saved this for people. A lot of people don't understand that there's a generation difference in Glock magazines into why some of them work better than others. You know, back in the early days when I first started getting into Glocks, the first magazines did not have a metal liner in them. So when you fill that magazine up, actually if you get it just even a little over half full, it would swell just slightly and pretty hard to pull out. Well, that's by design originally, because the Austrian army did not want magazines to just pop out if they happened to bump the magazine release button. So, but it got to be a real problem, because even when the magazine was empty, you couldn't pop them out. I tried numerous things to do that, because at the time I told you I was going back and forth between Browning high power 1911s and Glocks, you know, and shooting a little bit of competition from time to time on weekends. And the Glock was just too slow. I loved shooting it and everything. It shot well and did real well with it, but it was just too slow to compete well. So I tried taking a 350 grain 45-70 bullet, smashed it flat on an anvil, and put it under the, you know, above the floor plate under the spring of the magazine to give it a little weight in the bottom that wouldn't swell. That wouldn't make it swell, and that helped a little bit. I put a little powdered graphite on the outsides of them, and that helped a little bit. Finally, I warmed it up real good with a hair dryer, and put a screwdriver handle inside the grip, made and opened it up just a tiny bit, and put it in the freezer and let it cool off good. And that held the set real well. And that helped. It still wasn't as fast as I really wanted, as fast as my Browning high power, but it was acceptable. We could get by with it. Well, then pretty soon after that, they come out with the full metal linings on the magazines, and that was a lot better. But there's actually there's about 12, maybe 14 different generations magazines. The first one lasted from 1982 to 86. And then in 88 was the third generation. Fourth one was 89. And 90, 92, there's a couple of different ones come out in 94. And the best ones started coming out in 97 was pretty good. In 2004, actually in 2004, I think that's when the fourth generation magazines come out. So in 96 is when they started being the best, I think. And if you'll look at the back of the magazines, if you look at some of your older magazines, all of them had a, from the back at the top in the metal, there was a horseshoe-shaped opening, a gap, what would you call it, I don't know, we'll just call it an opening. And the first four generations of these guns had these openings on there. If they're horseshoe-shaped, be assured that they're not going to be as fast as some of the other ones. So those were the ones that required a little bit of a little bit of modification, a little bit of work there. C7, I know exactly. Well, no, I don't know exactly. You're saying a guy was being chased, shot himself in the chin and blew his left eye out and lived. I do know of a guy in Farmington who was shot, I don't remember, I think it was seven times with 45 ACP, and shot him in his right eye, put his eye out. His name was Leroy Johnson. He was a big guy, as big as me. He was the guy that chased that girl into XTO Energy out there, and they hauled him off to jail again. He was shot seven times, once in the head, in the eye, and he lived, went to jail. When he got out, he went right back to being his same old stupid self, and went off to jail again. I don't know if that's the same story you're talking about or not, but it reminded me of it anyway. So let me get down here and farther down. Sorry, I missed that. I would have talked about it earlier if I'd noticed that. But hey, see, Tundra Boar has joined us. Glad to see you. Yakima Glock, I don't know what you tried to post there, but I can't see it. So anyway, also, if any of you have any of these older magazines, I want to give you a little advice here that'll help you out. If you look at these older magazines up until probably maybe early 94, the sixth, seventh generation of gun, early 94, at the latest it would be late 92, 93, all of those prior to that have two little shoulders. If you're looking at the magazine from the front, you'll see two little shoulders about a half inch down from the top on each side. If you will take a light rasp or a coarse file and take the shoulder on the right-hand side, actually it'd be the left side of the magazine, right-hand side as you're looking at the front of it, and take that, so actually you can take them both down. But you take that, now that's not the little square shoulder in the very, at the rear of the magazine. That's the stop to keep you from inserting it too far. The other shoulder, you can see it's plainly, there's two of them that almost match. One's a little lower than the other one. On each side, towards the front, they go about halfway back. Take the one on the left side of the magazine, as it's inserted in the gun on the left side, and file that down flush. And that makes a huge difference. It makes that magazine acceptable even when you're doing speed. You got to take it completely off. And it doesn't hurt a thing to take the other one off either, off both sides. But the one on the left side of the magazine, you want to file that down completely down flush. And that magazine will speed up for you a whole bunch. If you'll notice on all the newer magazines, after 94, 95, somewhere in there, those shoulders don't even exist on any of the magazines anymore. So they were unnecessary to start with, but it may have been B.J. Williams. I thought it was Thompson. Maybe I was thinking of B.J. Thomas who sings that song, but you may be right. I think it was B.J. Williams. That's all I got to say about that. Lots of things you can do. There's been a lot of changes, of course, with any firearm, not just Glocks. There's a thousand different things that have changed. Every gun out there, especially in its early days, has had some changes that have happened, either to the gun, magazines, or both. And there's, I guess, the first and most prominent change that happened was the Generation 1 Glock that was discontinued very shortly after it came out and went to the Generation 2. And the 2s were in service, didn't change for a long, long time. And they went to the 3s. The 3s didn't change for a long time. Then they changed to Generation 4 when 2007 or 8, somewhere in there. I don't remember when the 4s came out exactly. But and that's happened with virtually every gun out there. And, you know, look how many times the 1911 changed and all the different things that they did with those. So Browning High Powers, even some changes in there. So the Doc, that's not exactly what I said, but yeah, I get the point. Yeah. Let's see. I forgot to mention that. The B2 Basic, thanks for reminding me. We're going to talk about this real quick, and then we'll go to a break. June 17th, 18th, and 19th, the Arms Expo in Yakima, Washington. I hope you guys are planning to put in for vacation, put in for time off, put a few bucks back, and meet us in Yakima, Washington at the Arms Expo. I am really excited about this one. The first one was good, but with everything we've learned, this one I think is going to be amazing, and anxious to get in there. And said I'll be there. Like I said, I'll have a booth. I don't know what I'm going to do. I may just play the Judas harp and tap my foot. I don't know what I'm going to do at the booth yet, but I'll have one. And the weekend after that, we'll have the 3-day personal defense handgun class. In the same place, a mile or so up the road, or 5 miles, or 10 miles, or whatever. I'm not sure exactly where the expo is going to be, if it's going to be in the same location or not, but it will be very close to there. So, anyway, I sure hope to see some of you guys there. I know I'm going to see some of you there, because some of you live, you know, right there, right close. So, there's, B2 Basic, just put the address in there for you. Don't miss it. It'll be a lot of fun. And so I think that I'm going to get out of here for a couple of minutes. I'll be back. I've got to play this song. I love this song. It's going to be a long time before I get tired of this. I hope you guys like it.
On a mountainside, not afraid to die.
The coyote. You know what freedom is, what freedom isn't. Stand. Because when you stand, others will stand with you. No matter how it ends, it matters how you stand.
Sorry about that. I had a very important phone call to make. We got some other things going on kind of behind the scenes here, so I had to take that real quick. And I've still got some things I got to do with that, but I can wait 20 minutes to do it, I guess. Okay, let's talk about something. We have never talked about this before. We've talked about the conditions, different conditions that you carry your gun, how you store them, put them in the truck, do all this stuff. We've never spent a whole lot of time, I don't think, on how to store your guns, not store them, but where your self-defense long guns, rifle, shotgun, whatever you may have standing in the corner there by the bed, in the closet or whatever. A good condition to store those in. Overwhelmingly, I have found that people store their long guns way overwhelmingly with the round in the chamber and ready to go. And I'm going to tell you that that is absolutely not the way to do it. There are way too many things that can go wrong. Your long gun is likely never, go back to this risk versus reward thing that we keep talking about. You're likely never ever to be in a quick draw type situation with your long gun. So if you have a round in the chamber, let me tell you just a few of the things that can go wrong. Not to mention the fact that, and I know that all of you are responsible enough that you're not going to have little kids running around, but, you know, if something happened and some unauthorized individual got up here and got a hold of it and it was ready to go, it could be disastrous if they're not trained in it. But some other thing, and I know people that have done this. I told you about my cousin over in New Mexico, between Albuquerque and Farmington there. He forgot to take a round out of the chamber. He didn't typically normally store them that way, but he forgot to take a round out. And he took a gun and set it down in this very expensive cherry wood gun case. And it went off and blew a hole in the top of that gun case. He never did fix it. It's all a constant reminder. He tells everybody about it. He's not ashamed of it. And it was a learning. It scared him to death because he's got two little kids. And he just said, I'm never going to fix it. That's always going to be there to remind me of that. But when you have a long gun loaded and chambered, even when they're on safety, not all guns are brand new and in perfect condition. A lot of our old rifles and shotguns and stuff they've been around the block a few times, been shot quite a bit. So if you have one that's got a real nice trigger or a real worn trigger, and it's chambered, you set it down a little bit too hard, it slips out of your hand and falls that last half an inch or an inch and hits a solid floor that's not carpeted, chances are a lot of those old guns will fire. You can make them fire by bouncing them on the floor. It's not going to be on purpose, but it can happen. If, you know, it could be something. There's been two people since I've been doing this show, C7 would remember me talking about at least one of them, that were killed because their pets, one guy was duck hunting, and I forgot if it was in his pickup or in his boat or whatever. Anyway, the dog somehow managed to get a foot on the trigger guard and pulled the trigger and blew him up with a shotgun. So how could that happen in your house? What if you had a cat or a dog or something that running around there and just knocked the gun over, standing in the corner? They can go off when they fall over just as easy as they can do it when you set them down too hard. Guys, let me remind you again. I've told you this before. Even in combat zones, everywhere from Doc can tell you, from South Africa to Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam. You don't, even in these combat torn, these war torn areas, you got combat troops there. You could be, you know, anything could happen. But this risk versus reward thing, it is better to have it unchambered, loaded magazine, off safety, ready to chamber. How long does it take, really, guys? for a gun that you're familiar with, what does it take, a half a second or less? Like I said, with a long gun, you're all rarely ever going to be in a fast draw situation. As I didn't finish my thought there, even in these combat areas, you don't these soldiers don't run around with guns with loaded chambers. They just don't. You walk out the gate, or you walk a little ways from camp, or whatever. You've got a designated spot out there. Everybody sits out there and locks and loads and checks everything, and you know, they're at some point along the way. That's when you chamber around. Yes, when you're out on patrol, certainly I think most everyone will chamber around. I'm not sure about the Israelis, but nevertheless, you don't do it while you're sitting around camp. That was one thing that I hated at Bundy Ranch, was their SOP there was everybody had loaded. I cringed. I was just mortified the whole time I was there that everybody was running. My guys didn't. Anybody was there, I absolutely forbid that during those type of situations. And but your shotgun or whatever you're storing, make sure it's off safety, not chambered. And some of them, so like let's say you got an 1897 Winchester that's got a hammer on it. If you're familiar enough with it, the first thing you want to do is probably cock that hammer. Could make it a little easier to work the slide. That's something you'll have to work out for yourself. You got to remember to get your thumb out of the way too before you work the slide. But C7's got another point. I know couple of people. One guy in Cody, Wyoming had a .243 chambered and went to put it in the back of the truck, and it went off while he was moving it to the back, blew the headliner out of the top of the truck. He was trying to put it in a rack or in the back, and nobody got hurt. It scared the ever-loving hell out of him. I've put pictures on the chat room before for a guy that had an AR-15 chambered. Probably off safety. He reached in and grabbed it by the muzzle, pulled it towards him, and it went off and blew his knee completely out of his body. I mean, the whole knee was gone. Those two tendons in the back of your behind your knee was the only thing holding his lower part of his leg on. It was a bad, bad wound. So that's there's too many guys that think they're Rambo, that somehow they've got some big tactical advantage by having it chambered in the house. You know, if you live alone and you've got a gun standing in the corner that just for coyotes and stuff, and you live outside out in the woods or something, you know, maybe that's okay. But you know, even then, like I said, how long does it take to chamber around? It's just short of being instantaneous, or maybe just long of being instantaneous. So you know, there's just so many things that can happen with a chambered firearm. You know, handguns are fine. Why? Well, because it's in a holster most of the time, and the trigger guard is covered on the holster, and that's fine. You should carry your handgun chambered. When it's laying on the nightstand at night, yes, it's chambered and it's ready to go. But it's not standing up in the corner. There's quite a bit of difference in the mechanical workings of any long gun, regardless of the style. I will back up and say one thing, and I think I've mentioned this before. If you've got a lever action, you know, a Model 94 or something, even that 1897 we talked about a while ago, if the hammer is down, then I'm okay with it. Some people are not. I'm okay with loaded chambers, hammer down. On bolt actions, most of your pumps, semi-automatics, most of those, there's no way to put the hammer down, and even if you did, you'd still have to rack it to cock the hammer, and you're throwing a live round out on the ground. So if you've got a Model 94 Winchester, you want to stand in the quarter 30-30 for coyotes, and it's got a round in the chamber and a hammer down, I'm okay with that, providing that there's no kids around. I can live with that. It's the ones that have the hammer that you can't let down that causes the problem. Set them down too hard, drop them, they fall over, anything like that. Accidents happen. You know, you grab a standing in the corner, and that's where the coat rack is, and you go to pull a coat off the rack and knock the gun over or something, it could very well go off. So that's just my story, and I'm sticking to it. So there's Doc saying right there, on patrol with carried in condition one, coming back into the base, unchambered in a barrel tin. There you go. That's and Doc would know. Doc's been there, done that. You don't spend a whole lot of time in South Africa without developing some pretty strict habits in safety and gun handling there. And I'd say that if Tampico Scout was still there, probably our most recent returnee from a combat area, I'm sure that he would tell you the same thing. DeTinker, yeah, there you go. DeTinker says he loses a couple of deer hunters every year from weapons that are dropped. So there's just no excuse to have a long gun chambered and ready to go, with the exception of something with an external hammer, unless it is ready to go, unless you're about, you know, even if you're out hunting. You go to climb that tree stand, there's always people out there that will pull that gun up with a cord or something with it chambered. And it's just one of those things that is just so difficult to get across to people. Jesus, ridiculous. But anyway, that's my safety rant for the night. You guys can do with it as you please. Hang on a minute. We have incoming. Yeah, I'll have to check that. I'll check the authenticity of that in a little while. Anyway. Well, I hope everybody is getting ready for a big weekend. Liberty Lounge will go on as scheduled tomorrow, unless I get run over by a truck between now and then. Liberty Lounge will happen. Sorry we missed it last week. I don't know exactly what's going to happen yet this coming week. I will probably be back in a mountain time zone, so for me, I'll be going on at 8 o'clock again. Where I'm at now, since Arizona doesn't change, I'm on Pacific time, and it starts a little early, and it is definitely a little bothersome for us sometimes. But chances are pretty good I may be back in time to do a show next week, and I'm sorry, I just can't tell you for sure until I see what the schedule of events, how it's all going to unfold there. So with all that being said, I'm going to get on out of here, and we'll see you guys tomorrow night for Liberty Lounge. Be sure and join us for that. It's a lot of fun, always. Good night. Okay, let's call it a day. Thank you for joining me. Join me every Monday through Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time for The Shooting Bench, right here on Just Measures Radio Network. Let's free.